Good morning. You're listening to 91.5 KUNV, and this is Neon Eden. I'm your host, Tovin LePan, reporter for the Las Vegas Sun. My co-host, as always, is Las Vegas Sun politics reporter Andrew Doman.
Good morning.
Las Vegas is hosting a National Clean Energy Summit organized by Senator Harry Reid this week. It's the sixth year for the summit, during which politicians, industry experts, academics, and others come together to discuss the future of energy in America. Joining us today is John Wellinghoff, current chairman of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and former Nevada consumer advocate. Good morning and welcome back to Nevada.
Well, thank you. Good morning, Tovin and Andrew. Good to be here.
And you're one of the keynote speakers at the conference. Can you just tell us a little bit about what this conference is all about and what it's seeking to achieve?
Well, it's really about clean energy and how we can, in fact, ensure that clean energy is available to the grid and available to consumers so that we can reduce costs and improve reliability and do that all through the provision of abundant clean energy such as we have available in the state of Nevada.
And so, John, you've been involved in this kind of stuff for a while. I mean, several years ago, you were one of the chief architects of the state's renewable portfolio standard. It's been amended a few times since and has earned praise as well as critiques. Can you tell us, what is that renewable standard all about, and has it worked?
Well, the renewable standard is all about creating a market for renewable energy. When you have these emerging technologies such as wind and solar, geothermal, which is very available in our state, and others, you need to create markets for them so that, in fact, they can flourish and ultimately stand on their own in the marketplace next to more conventional technologies that have been there and been fully operational for, you know, 100 years or so.
And now Republicans around the country in various state legislatures have tried to repeal or roll back these portfolio standards, arguing that they're basically distorting the market. And Nevada was an early adopter of these renewable energy standards. What was it political back then when you were involved? Why has renewable energy been, in some cases, so politicized?
Well, in fact, the efforts of these groups, and I don't know if I would attribute it to the Republicans. I think there's been some pretty far radical groups that have tried to repeal these in a number of states. In fact, they haven't been successful in any state because generally the population, the grassroots individual voters support these types of technology. So in Nevada, it really wasn't political. It was very bipartisan. I worked with Senator Randolph Townsend, of course, who was Republican, when I was as consumer advocate, and after the time I was consumer advocate, when this renewable portfolio standard was actually put in place in 2001. And we did it on a very bipartisan basis. We talked to not only, you know, the Democratic members of the Assembly and Senate in the legislature of Nevada, but also the Republican members as well. And I think there was a virtually unanimous support for the standard at that period of time. And I think there still is a very high level of support in Nevada and most other states to incorporate these kinds of new clean technologies into our overall energy mix.
And now, regardless of the politics, a lot of these changes do in the energy market have real impacts for consumers. And you've talked before about renewable energy and energy efficiency and distributed generation. I think a lot of people are familiar with these things like solar panels and windmills. But what are these things and how can market changes affect renters, homeowners, and people in Southern Nevada and their utility bills?
Well, market changes can affect them very significantly in the sense that what we're seeing now, especially at FERC, with a lot of firms that are coming into FERC and talking to us about the innovations that they're putting in place for consumers, is that consumers can actually start taking these technologies into their homes and businesses, actually putting them into their actual residential and commercial systems, and by doing that, really lower their overall bills because they can take the technologies and use them not only to support their needs for their services of better lighting and heating and cooling, for example, in Las Vegas, but also they can be used to support the grid. They can do things like provide voltage support. They can do things like provide grid regulation services that cause the grid to become more stable and have less reliability problems. So these types of resources that consumers can now actually purchase independently through third-party developers of these resources can support not only the consumer in their everyday need for energy services, electricity, et cetera, but also support the overall grid, and consumers can actually get paid or reduce their total costs by using the systems in that way.
But in Nevada, I know we see this sometimes at the Las Vegas Sun when people will comment on some stories. Some people don't seem to like this idea that the utility NV Energy here uses what they call quote unquote demand side management or quote unquote lost sales compensation. This idea that the utility company can charge you for the energy that you don't use because you saved energy through energy efficiency measures. Is there a savings that consumers aren't noticing here? Does that sort of thing make sense?
Well, that's why we really need to take it out of the hands of the utility and put it back in the hands of the consumer by having free and open markets. We need to have both wholesale markets and retail markets that allow for consumers to have choices and in those choices be able to use their own resources in ways that can drive down the total cost of their bills. So right now in Nevada, we have what's called a vertically integrated utility system where you have one utility that ultimately operates the distribution system, the transmission system, and the generation. That's unlike many parts of the country, certainly in Texas, in New England, in the Mid-Atlantic area, in Washington, D.C., where I am. There is retail choice, and there is also a very robust wholesale market. If you have those two things operating together, consumers have much more opportunity to control their bills and to ensure that they can use energy efficiency and they can use demand response in ways that benefit them to an optimum level without having this this juxtaposition of this intermediary being this vertically integrated entity between them and the overall grid to be able to reduce the amount of benefits that they can get from this kind of interaction with the grid.
So, John, what's that mean sort of for the average Nevadan? Does that mean that I could, for instance, just sort of pay a contractor to put some solar panels up on my house and sort of be a little bit more independent from, as you said, this vertically integrated utility? Is that how that would work?
Well, it means much more than that. It means independence and control for the consumer, for the ability to not only put in distributed generation like solar, but also to add things like to it like storage, which could assure you power on a 24-hour basis. And then in addition to that, add in other resources that could provide you more control and more ability to reduce costs overall, like utilizing your defrost cycle on your refrigerator for ancillary services, utilizing your water heater, utilizing your electric car battery if you had an electric car. All those things could be resources to the grid that you could, in essence, bid into or put in as part of a market to the grid. In fact, are being used by consumers in other parts of the country right now as grid market services, and do that in a way that would lower your overall costs, give you more control, and ensure that you have still reliable, affordable, and clean energy services.
So I, as just some guy out here in Southern Nevada and Las Vegas, could just basically be putting energy back into the grid and almost be making money, or at least offsetting my bill. Is that what other states are doing?
That's what other areas are doing that have wholesale markets that allow retail customers to participate in those wholesale markets, like the whole Mid-Atlantic area. There's a grid operator here called PJM. Stands for Pennsylvania, Jersey, Maryland, but actually encompasses not only New Jersey and Pennsylvania and Maryland, but into Illinois, Chicago, and Ohio, and West Virginia, and also Delaware and District of Columbia and Virginia. That whole area allows retail consumers to do things like bid in services from their electric water heater or electric car, bid in services from larger or smaller loads that they may have that they can modulate during the day or during the evening, and do that on usually an aggregated basis. It's not done by the individual device, but on 100 kilowatts or more of services into the grid, and that all then provides streams of payment back to those consumers to reduce their bills. So people can do things like, in essence, get paid to charge their electric car, because their electric car can, in fact, provide grid regulation services that are paid at a higher level than it actually costs to pay for the charging of the car. That's being done right now in Delaware. And it can be done in Nevada as well. We just have to transfer to a more robust wholesale market, and then we have to put in place a retail market as well that allows these choices to consumers.
Well, for anyone listening now, that might sound pretty cool to be able, just as you know, again, someone who might be listening to the show saying, okay, that sounds good. I can make some money here, at least save on energy costs. What's preventing us from doing that here in Nevada? Why can't we do that now?
Well, these markets are voluntary. So the owners of the assets, which would be your local utility company, have to voluntarily agree to do these kinds of things, to move to these markets. And in fact, the new entity who's going to be acquiring NV Energy, which is the Mid-America Corporation, one of their subsidiaries in the West, Pacific Core, is in fact moving towards this type of market for their subsidiaries in Utah, in Montana, in Oregon, and Idaho. That entity is going to be working with the California Independent System Operator to put in what they call an energy imbalance market, which is the first initial steps towards, you know, a full, robust wholesale market. So, there's a possibility that, you know, these structures, these market structures, will start to move forward throughout the West.
And you brought up the sale of NV Energy, and now, so looking forward, you know, the billionaire investor, the company owned by Warren Buffett, is buying NV Energy, and it's the power company for the vast majority of Nevadans. And people might be surprised to know these aren't just the kind of things where you buy a lawnmower and then it's yours. There's a whole process here that Buffett and NV Energy have to go through. And I was wondering if you could talk to us about what's happening now.
Well, there's a number of regulatory hurdles they have to go through. One is filing at FERC, and I can't talk about the details of that one way or the other, because I'm going to probably have to sit on that filing and make a decision. But they have to file at my agency for approval for the acquisition. They also have to file before the commission in Nevada. The Nevada Commission has to issue an approval there. And I'm sure there is a number of other federal and state regulatory approvals that they have to go through. But the two primary ones are one at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission here, and the other one is at the Nevada Commission in Nevada.
And how long does that process normally take?
Usually about 6 months.
Okay. And you're listening to KUNV 91.5. This is Neon Eden, and our guest today is John Wellinghoff, the current chairman of the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, who is in town for the National Clean Energy Summit. And now I want to get back, still talking about NV Energy, which it revs up its power supply in the summer by turning on the coal plant in Clark County, Reed Gardner. And now the Nevada legislature has basically ordered the utility out of the coal market. The facility will start shutting down soon, and the utility will build more renewable energy generation, but rates will also go up. And I was wondering, did you see that as a good idea and a good deal for Nevada?
Well, rates may or may not go up. I mean, the issue ultimately is going to be, you know, other alternative sources, which could include doing more energy efficiency and demand response within Nevada itself, which in fact is much cheaper than coal. And also there's a number of renewable resources that contracts for them in some areas are less expensive than coal, which include wind, for example, and in some cases even geothermal, but we have extensive geothermal in northern Nevada. So, you know, ultimately, anytime we can make our energy resources cleaner, but also at the same time provide more choices for consumers and also ensure that rates, are stable. I'm not saying that necessarily they'll go down, but I'm not saying that they necessarily will go up from these events, because You have to look at the total mix and what the cost of the total mix of energy is to serve the loads. It's a good thing. It's a good thing for Nevada. There's no question about it.
No, it just you know, looking at the coal markets just around the country, there seems to be a lot of hesitation about building any new coal plants or even keeping them open with some impending regulations that may be coming down to make those sort of investments more expensive. Where do you see that kind of going in this country? Are we going to just get out of coal completely, I think, in a few dozen years or so? Or where is that going?
Well, the costs of the commodity coal have gone up. There's no question about that. So prices for the fuel have gone up, as well as the price to ensure that it's a clean resource. I mean, we can't certainly continue to have resources that have exceedingly negative effects on consumers with respect to consumer health, both at a local level and potential effects at a global level, and continue to move forward with those types of resources and not internalize those costs into the costs of delivering the services from them. So, you know, coal and other resources, I believe, should all be able to be allowed to compete in the market. But in that market, we should ensure that all the costs associated with that particular resources are incorporated in that market price. And if we don't do that, then we're kind of kidding ourselves. So, you know, I'm not sure where coal will go, but certainly if you do incorporate in the health costs of coal and the costs of cleaning the air from coal plants, the commodity costs of coal, the climate costs of coal, all those costs incorporated into them, and then put them in the market, let them compete and see how they come out. I think ultimately they will come out in a place where they're much more expensive than most cleaner resources.
And now within Southern Nevada, at least the Reed Gardner coal plant, that's something that, again, the utility, they rev that up in the summer to meet the demand when everyone, you know, cranks up their AC when it's 110 degrees out here. You mentioned a little while ago this demand response, and you've also worked with this thing called the smart grid. You know, these are two policies you've worked on for years. But can you help us break this down for average guys like us? What are these concepts all about?
Well, they're about making the whole system work more efficiently. I mean, for example, there is a tremendous amount of wind in Oregon that operates much of the year. But because the way the transmission lines are configured, we can't get that cheap power down to Nevada. But I had, for example, a firm in my office literally, very recently here, within the last couple of days, and that firm showed me technology that they can put on the transmission lines to transfer more than 1,000 megawatts of additional wind energy into California and into Nevada. That much energy, is much more than all the Reed Gardner plants put together, and much, much cheaper than the Reed Gardner as well. So ultimately, if we have the ability to advance this technology and place it into the grid to make the grid smarter and less congested and more efficient, we can reduce costs for consumers by utilizing that technology.
So some critics have said, though, well, it's not always going to be windy all the time. The wind won't always be blowing in Oregon at that specific time, or, of course, the sun won't always be shining exactly when we need the energy. Where are we with battery technology? Is there a way to save this energy for times when the wind isn't
blowing?
There
is. We're moving very quickly, very rapidly with new battery technology. There are at least 3 to 4 companies that are on the edge of commercialization, and when I say edge, they're ready within the next 6 months to a year to actually go into full commercial production of new advanced battery chemistries that are beyond lithium ion that has been so much in the news of recent because of some of the problems with Boeing and some of the others. But these are new non-hazardous technologies that, in fact, have longer cycles than lithium ion. They're much cheaper than that technology, that have the ability and promise to provide substantial storage, number one. Number two, when I talked about efficiencies of the grid and being able to transfer a grid from one part of the country to the other from a transmission standpoint, it's true that the wind doesn't blow all the time, but it's always blowing sometime somewhere. And it's all, and the wind is and the sun is shining most of the time somewhere as well. Again, to the extent that we can better transfer energy around the western United States, where we have tremendous resources in Montana, in Wyoming, in New Mexico, in Nevada, in Arizona, all those states, the diversity is such among the resources that there are adequate levels of resources if we utilize that diversity, that we can supply a great majority of our needs overall in the West.
I want to sort of transition a little bit. I guess this ties in maybe a little bit to batteries, but I understand that you've also done some work on electric cars.
Yes.
Where do you see that going? There's sort of a debate going on right now in Clark County. We're talking about a gas tax going up, and some people are saying, well, people who drive electric cars, you know, they're not paying that tax. And it turns out there's very few of those people who own electric vehicles right now. But do you see more those becoming more affordable, people buying more of those in the future?
Yes, especially in those areas where we have these organized wholesale markets where those electric cars can actually participate in those markets where I talked about, like in PJM in the East. They've already demonstrated the concept and, in fact, have available to any car owner who can aggregate a number of cars up to 100 kilowatts or more. Those cars can now provide what's called regulation service to the grid. And under the PJM model, those cars were receiving payments between $7 and $10 per day per car to ultimately provide a grid service while they were being plugged in to charge. So they were receiving charge, and at the same time they were providing this grid service back of regulation and receiving more in payment than it cost them to charge every night. So that kind of economic turnaround, when you multiply that across, you know, all of the potential buyers of electric cars, could be a very strong economic driver for moving people into electric vehicles. It can it could effectively wipe out the cost differential between an internal combustion gasoline engine car without extensive batteries like electric car and the extra cost of batteries for an electric car. And in essence, could equalize the cost between the two, so you would be, you know, cost neutral as to whether you bought an electric car or an internal combustion car, and it would then also reduce the long-term costs because your cost of fuel, in essence, the electricity, would be much less than the cost of the gasoline.
Is this an industry that you think that Nevada could get into? I know right now we're here in Nevada are trying to get the drone industry basically to come in. And a few years back in the state legislature, there was even talk of an autonomous vehicle bill that would let Google test their cars that basically drive themselves around.
Right.
Is Nevada a place where you think we could sort of get in on this electric vehicle market and maybe even provide some jobs here?
No, I think we could. I think there'd be some aspect of it where we could ultimately be involved in either the battery part of it, battery manufacturer, or, you know, other component parts of these cars. I certainly think, or warehousing is for parts, as Nevada is very, very big in warehousing. Another industry that we can get into is the solar industry. And I know that Solar City, for example, I believe is opening up a facility in Las Vegas. And I think there's a number of other solar companies that are doing very well in providing distributed solar systems to homes and businesses. And that's, I think, a very big industry that Nevada could move into.
Does that have more jobs associated with it? I know whenever these renewable projects come up in the state, I think some of the elected officials are always a little bit disappointed when they realize that a lot of these are just construction jobs and they go away after a very short period of time.
Well, that's true when you're talking about constructing a solar project, for example, like the one out at Nellis Air Force Base, which I was very involved in, or some of the ones that are out in El Dorado Valley, south of Las Vegas. Putting up the project, you have construction jobs, for a limited period of time, and then running and operating the project, you know, requires very few individuals. But no, I'm talking about, you know, locating distribution centers for the development of new solar projects in Las Vegas or in northern Nevada, places where panel manufacturers could actually manufacture products or store and warehouse products and assemble systems that could then go out throughout the western United States. I'm talking about sort of a distribution hub for solar, and that could bring many jobs into the state.
And could that basically be almost like the cable guy, the technician who comes out to your house to set up your cable? You just might be coming out in a van with a solar panel to set that up. And is that kind of the way that you see this going in the future?
Exactly, but I see it more as sort of a, you know, putting package systems on railroad cars that would go to, you know, Denver to be put on roofs in Denver, but, you know, the whole system would be packaged in Las Vegas, for example, based upon, you know, an internet order that was done kind of thing. You know, I could see it, you know, more not simply locally putting on solar on roofs in Las Vegas, which there certainly is a huge opportunity and growth for jobs there, but also being a distribution hub throughout the western United States to assemble systems, package components, manufacture components, et cetera.
Is anybody working on that right now, or is that something we're trying
to
attract?
Well, like
here?
I say, Solar City, which is one of the biggest distributors in the United States, is putting a facility in Las Vegas. I'm not sure exactly the nature of that facility, but I know that they're moving a great number of their employees to Las Vegas.
So that's going to be hopefully be a growth industry.
Yes.
Sometime taken off here in the future.
Great growth industry for Nevada.
And just with not only in southern Nevada, but also in northern Nevada. Again, you spoke a little earlier about some of the opportunities to just bring in energy from other parts of the state and the region. I know NV Energy is working right now on this One Nevada transmission line. Is that something that will help consumers bring in energy from other parts of the state, and will that reduce rates at all?
Yeah, that line will help them not only bring in energy from other parts of the state, but from the entire western region, where there's available cheap resources such as wind energy, the cheaper geothermal that can be developed in northern Nevada. The wind energy in Wyoming and Montana could actually come in through that line in the north that goes down ultimately into Las Vegas. So the opportunities for additional cheap energy into southern Nevada from that line are significant.
But isn't natural gas sort of the real cheapest option right now?
No, not really. Solar wind is actually cheaper than natural gas in many parts of the country. Certainly where we have very high capacity factors for wind, which would include Montana and Wyoming, and good parts of the Midwest, we're seeing contracts in the neighborhood of 3 cents a kilowatt hour, which is substantially below contracts for natural gas.
All right, you've been listening to Neon Eden on 91.5 KUNV. Our producer is Steven Zeller, and for Andrew Doman, I'm Tovin LePan. See you next week.